Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Malware by J.D. Ashta, narrated by Jason Vu. Chapter 1. "Think you're ready to take me on again, Master?" I asked with a grin. I looked across the clean stone arena from my tall pedestal and surveyed the battlefield to be. I'd fought on it dozens of times now, but we were always adding new obstacles to keep it interesting. Woonji smiled, flashing a set of perfectly white teeth. "You're getting a bit cocky for my liking, Acolyte." She pulled her small control panel onto her lap, and while I did the same, I did it for show. Over the summer, I had honed my ability to remote access to Ghost Systems, which allowed me to operate him without additional machina, like a control panel.
"With my help,"
May blurted in my head over my train of thought.
"Yes, of course,"
I replied mentally. There were staff members in the audience arena watching. While a select few of them knew my situation with May, not all of them did, and we preferred to keep it that way. We didn't want to become a spectacle or a science experiment. May's knowledge was powerful enough that someone would kill me to get to her. Her information on nanites, what my people knew as Munde, or magic, was immense and invaluable. I'd grown more powerful in a year of her guidance than I could have imagined. My initial core design was of my father's doing, but May was the one who'd made all my dietary choices to help complete my second band and start my third. With the second band completed, I could easily combine two Munde at once. I could manifest more interesting spells like glimmers for Tuco or lightning-infused punches, neither of which I could control well, but the possibilities were there. And the possibilities were endless. "Are you going to dawdle all night or make a move?" Woonji taunted, and her bot, the rabbit, surged forward. I went through the motions on the control panel to pull Tuco out of the way, but with remote access, it was just a show for the others. In reality, my direct connection with him allowed me much faster response times. So fast, Woonji had yet to beat me since our renowned fight 6 months ago.
"Where's your head at, apprentice?"
Woonji asked. The rabbit's armor burst apart, and snaking tentacles reached for my retreating bot. The sparse crowd whooped and cheered for the boss, hoping in earnest that she'd put me down for once. I skittered to go around the corner of my pedestal and dropped a smoke bomb in my wake.
"Silly boy," Woonji murmured with a smirk.
The rabbit twisted its tentacles like a fan, blasting the misty obstruction from the air. She gasped as the smoke screen dispersed, revealing Tuco mere centimeters from her rabbit. She hopped backwards, looping her tentacles in a sphere around Tuco. But I already had the kill shot. Tuco's claw clamped down on the rabbit's neck, and I shouted, "Bing!" Woonji disengaged the rabbit's tentacles with a sigh as the crowd moaned in disappointment. Rhiney cupped her hands to her mouth and shouted,
"Next time, boss! You got it!"
Woonji set her control panel aside.
"You keep changing your tactics. How am I supposed to learn?"
I put my right fist to my left palm and bowed.
"Adapt faster, master."
She mirrored my bow.
"Get back to the workshop and finish for the night. Then, go home for the season."
I cocked my head.
"But there's still a week left. You don't need me?"
She shook her head.
"Of course I do. But your family needs you more. Go spend time with them before school."
I bowed all the way to the floor.
"Thank you, master."
I walked Tuco along with me through the halls as I made my way to the workshop, my home away from home. There were three levels of shelves, all loaded down with spare parts, metals, wiring, scrap, and more. The previous artisan had left the place a complete mess. I'd spent 2 weeks reorganizing the shop to be usable. Level 3 was where I kept the plastics and hard metals. Level 2 was a combination of soft metals, raw materials like gunpowder, and spare components that were pre-built and ready to go. Level 1 was all the tools, a huge metal desk to work at, and the current order's device reminding me of approaching deadlines, with a cubby for all the bots awaiting service. I'd built a pulley elevator at the center of the room I could activate with Ma Munde to take me exactly where I needed to go for the part I wanted. Everything had its place.
"Neat freak,"
May joked. I chuckled.
"Maybe." "It's easier when everything is in order."
I found the last order sitting on the desk. It was a brawler type bot, the most popular.
but this one was unique because it had four arms for pummeling. I pulled up the work order on the display device built into the desk. The owner wanted to add two more arms. I grimaced as I pulled the bot to the center of the workstation. The two arms protruding from the back already felt tacked on, rather than part of the initial design. The bot had several dents and scrapes on the chest, and a completely unnecessary head. The secondary arms coming out from the back were longer than the two coming from the shoulder joints, but were still too short to block chest shots. I reviewed the proposed request and scoffed at the over-engineering. This wasn't the best way to go about it, but it was my job to follow the design requests, not to work on what I knew was best for the bot. Woonji had made that clear after my first bot upgrade, where I'd gone a bit off the rails. More like a complete redesign, May crackled through the speaker on my chest as she materialized on the desk beside me. Yeah, yeah, I said, waving her off. I'm not going to take any creative liberties, just follow the work order. I got down to business, mounting open the chassis for the addition of the two limbs at the chest cavity. My Enmunde had advanced significantly since working at the Rabbit Rabbit, giving me great leaps in skill that would put me above the other second-year students. My Li was still pathetic, though, and my Rai wasn't much better. Hana wouldn't let me live it down.
Perhaps you should spend a summer at a dance house,
May mimicked Hana's voice, and I frowned at her. Don't do that. She rolled her eyes and practically her whole head.
You know I love Hana just about as much as you do.
Hey, I cut her short, pointing the scanner menacingly at her light projection on the table. Boundaries, remember? She shrugged.
Sure, sure, but anyone could see how infatuated you are with her in a single glance. So I'm not preying on your thoughts.
When the upgrade was complete, I put the bot back in its cubby and cleaned up my station. Nothing was wasted. I melted down the small remaining pieces and put them back in their appropriate metal bucket. I walked to the door and called back my Ma'amunde that kept the lights running. I beamed at the clean, orderly, dark room. Till next time, I whispered. I made my way through the long hall, past the bathrooms and up the stairs to the bar.
Come on, Rai Rai. Just one more drink.
A patron slurred as he leaned over the bar, hand groping for the bottle Rainy held out of reach. You better relax or I'll negate your buzz, she warned, her free hand glowing a cool teal. It was a Rai Li spell, one part persuasion and another part life magic that would zap the drunk's core into action, producing Joe to cleanse the alcohol from his system. I'd seen her and the bouncers use this method on people who'd had far too much several times. It was an intriguing spell, but nothing I needed to concern myself with. I was here to fix and upgrade bots. Night, I said, waving to Rainy.
Jiong, wait,
she called as she pushed the drunk back onto his seat and hopped over the bar. I turned and she pulled me into a tight hug, then ruffled my hair.
I'm going to miss you, Nam Dose.
I chuckled at the familiar moniker, which meant something close to little brother, and scratched the scar on the side of my head that would never again grow hair.
I'll be back on some rest days, I'm sure. I don't think any amount of classwork will keep Woonji from assigning me bot repairs.
Hey, Rainy scolded, pointing a finger at me. Call her boss. I shook my head as I watched the drunk patron lean over the bar. Clumsily grabbing at the bottle Rainy had set barely out of reach. I pointed and said,
Better do something about that.
Rainy looked over her shoulder and gasped.
Daya! That's it! You're out!
She stormed back inside, and I walked out into the warm twilight, hands stuffed in my pockets. I caught the start of Rainy's scolding before the door jingled shut. I was sure it would jingle open again in a moment when the patron was kicked out. It was a humid trip to the train, and I was grateful that the air circulation system was operational when I stepped on. The train designers created machina to pull the moisture from the air as it passed through the vents, which helped sterilize it of any illnesses too. It was a precaution to keep the sicknesses of outer cities from reaching the kingdom on the express line. The train jostled as we made our way to Piki, the last outer city stop on the line. Piki was a decent-sized city, due in part to the train system. There were various establishments for liquor, tea, fighting, dancing, shopping, and many other things purely for entertainment. It was a commerce point that Kingdomites would frequent for cheaper wares, too. The foliage grew dense the farther from the kingdom we went, and the stars shone more brightly than in the thick neon glow of Inner City. I'd spent a fair amount of time in both places, and while I would miss seeing the sky so clearly, the kingdom had everything, even at night. Hot, fresh dim sum, no problem. Entertainment of every sort, Joe and Ma fights, dazzle dances, and more. Malady healing of all kinds, from skinned knees to broken hearts. The kingdom was a hub of activity and wonder. Final stop, Piki Nadosi. The overhead speaker crackled, and I pulled my bag onto my shoulder as I stood. A few weary faces around me looked ready to depart and collapse. Kingdom labor was rarely easy, from cleaning sewage at Yuri's parents' company to tending rooms and running laundry. Outer city folk always had the back-breaking jobs. I was lucky. Wunji paid me well for my work, 40% of all upgrades and 10 kudi an hour for everything else. I had saved more than enough to get my family moved into an apartment in the kingdom with a shared garden space, a patio for private use, and 4 bedrooms, indoor plumbing, no more running to the river for water, and quick access to several renowned primary schools. The best benefit by far was the proximity to the hospital. There were specialists there who believed Machina core theory, the idea that our magical cores were made up of machines. Something Mei had already confirmed for me long ago. While I still called it Munde and spells out of reflex, I knew that my core was made almost entirely of tiny machines called nanites. Almost entirely. The black crystal at the center of my core was something Mei had never encountered. She didn't understand how, but it played a role in turning raw energy from my food and surroundings into different Munde for spell casting. I yawned as I took the steps down from the train platform to the lively Pigi. There were rickshaw drivers stationed all around the street calling out the weary travelers. Many of the travelers took up the offer at a kuri a minute. I waved away the offers as I got onto the road home. I could keep a good pace and be there in 40 minutes and save my hard-earned money for something more important, like kingdom citizenship paperwork for my family. The pattering of my feet on the dirt path merged with the chirping of crickets and grena frogs with their loud, growling ribbits, creating a nighttime orchestra of sound. I was eager to get home to my bed, so I upped the pace and cycled Joe for a boost. The summer air was still warm, though the threat of fall was on the horizon, and the moisture made my tobok cling to my skin. And Munde cycled easily as I approached the river. I diverted the flow of magic to my feet, preparing to try something new.
"I don't think this is going to work the way you want it to," Mei warned, and I shrugged her off.
The soles of my leather shoes became rigid, and a chill shot up my legs to the base of my spine. The ground below my feet frosted over with every footfall, and I picked up speed toward the river. I pulled down a deep breath as I stepped onto the water, and fell straight in. Chapter 2. Freezing water swirled around my legs and I dropped, waist-deep, a meter from the shore. I shivered, reversing the Munde floor through my feet to heat the water instead. The current pulled me along, but I sent a reserve of Joe to my arms and legs to paddle to the other side. I dragged myself onto the shore with the help of some dangling roots a few meters from the path. I pulled my bag around and leaned against a tree. Mei cleared her throat with that tone. I rolled my eyes. Yes, I know.
You and your mother certainly have one thing in common.
What's that? I asked before cycling down another breath for En Munde. I swirled my fingers around and around like Yuri had shown me, and lifted all the water from the contents in my bag, then returned it to the river. Mei tutted.
Neither one of you listens to me when I warn you of danger.
I hummed with amusement, and made short work of my soaking clothes. My bag and I were dry in under a minute, and we were back on the road home. The dangers of falling into waist-deep water is not the same as the danger of core degradation.
What if I break? She retorted,
and my gut clenched in worry, then relaxed. I had showered plenty of times with her embedded in my skin. If something were to happen to her, though, I didn't want to think about it. Not only had May become my close friend, too close sometimes, but without her, I feared there would be no way to save my mother from her disease. I sighed. I will take your warnings more seriously. The rest of the way home was quick, and before I knew it, I was walking into our little cottage to the smell of rich oxtail soup. I closed the door quietly and set my shoes and my pack off to the side. It was dark in the house, but lamplight shone through the back window where I saw the silhouette of my mother. I washed my hands in the kitchen, then stepped out back. Mother gave a waning smile as I joined her at our living swing chair, something Sui had crafted from the nearby tree. I situated a cushion on the hardwood seat and plopped down next to her, swinging it harder as I did. "Good day?" she asked with a rasp, my brow pulled together in worry. "Is your throat sore?" I smelled the soup. She shook her head and waved me off. "I'm fine. Just a bit of swelling from the pollen." "Did you run out of Cho's pollen-blocking elixir?" I asked. She shook her head. "I don't want to waste it. I'm fine." I drew in a deep breath to start my rant on how the pollen is controlled in the kingdom. It wouldn't bother her so much there, and she wouldn't have to worry about wasting the potions I bought specifically for her. "Remember the goal of the conversation," May whispered gently. I swallowed and then put my hand on Mother's while we swung. It was a good day. I finished 2 upgrades and a repair. "Did Hannah bring you anything for dinner?" she asked, poking for weaknesses in Hannah's character. I hated when she did that. She worked today too, on the other side of the kingdom. There wasn't time to see one another, I said with a resigned sigh. I knew what came next. Mother scowled. "I'm not so sure about this girl, Jiyoung." Why did she always want to test my nerves? I pulled in an even slower breath than the first had been. Because she had to work? "You're being too harsh." "So you're hungry then?" My mother rose from the swing, and I put a gentle hand on her shoulder to pull her back. She looked at me puzzled, and I smiled. "I can eat soon. This is nice, and I'd like to sit here with you." "I don't want your energy too low. You need to be able to make monje." She tried to pull away again. "Oma, please, sit. I want to talk to you." I used the childlike moniker for mother, one that Minji and Taegon used. Her shoulders tensed. "I know what you want to talk about." "I don't want to talk about it. I've made up my mind. Sehun said he'll take care of the house and farm. We won't have to sell it. He's been wanting a place of his own since his older sister will be taking over his family's farm." "When does she due again?" my mother asked, changing the subject. I chided her softly. "Oma, please, focus. This is important. Your health is important." "I'm fine. I haven't had a relapse in over 8 months. The ghost's recommendations are working, I think," she said, but I could hear the annoyance in her faked positivity. She did look better. Her skin wasn't radiant, but it had fewer wrinkles, and her cheeks weren't so hollow. Some of her silver hairs had faded and were black once more. Her fingernails weren't so brittle and broken, and she had gained a few kilos. Her red nose was due to that pollen, but otherwise, she was looking much healthier. "It's in remission, Jiyoung," May reminded me in my head. "The disease will get worse again, and she will continue to decline until death." I squeezed my mother's hand. "May is very smart. She knows a lot. And what she knows is helping you right now, but..." "You said it was nice that you wanted to sit," she snapped and pulled her hand away. "This isn't so nice for me anymore." My frustration was boiling into anger. "It's not going to be so nice for Minji when you die before she's even 13. It won't be nice for Enbi and Sui to have no mother at their secondary graduation, or..." Mother stood, tutting away my words as she threw her hands up. "May doesn't know everything." "No, but she knows a lot.
The disease is in remission because of your reduced core activity, but it will return when it gets cold again. Your body will automatically respond to the weather and attempt to create Joe to protect your muscles, and the disease will attack the Munde and your core. It is still in your body, no matter how much better you are right now. Mother was silent as she stared across the garden, arms crossed. I sat back, exhaustion overcoming me. There are so many natural triggers that can be controlled in the kingdom that will extend your life while we search for a cure. My siblings will be able to attend better primary schools. They'll have better apprenticing opportunities, and we'll all have so much more. And yet, still have so little in our souls, she sneered. I gritted my teeth. We're supposed to let Minzi be a mute forever, because Father wouldn't be able to find us if we left. You damn everyone else in the family to a lesser life because you're scared? She glowered down at me. I'm not afraid. This is our home, Cheong. Our home is where our family is healthy and prosperous, I retorted, feeling heat in my face. Mother laughed. Yes, and with all the money you make from your apprenticeship, we can afford much more here. Oxtail, we haven't had it in 6 years. I contained my growl of impatience, but only just. We can still have those things in the kingdom. We can have more of them. We can have someone else make the oxtail soup so we can spend time with Minzi or the boys. Or you can go see a close doctor who knows what they're doing. Why do I need a doctor when we have Mei? She seems very knowledgeable about what's going on, she fired back. The cyclical hypocrisy was burning through my patience. I stood to face her. Mei is very smart. But if you're not with me, how can she work on your problems? If I can't see you for 6 months, how can we help you? You're just making excuses to live closer to Hannah. The words were worse than a slap across the face. I hated her for a flash, but sent a calming wave of Joe down my arms to release the muscles. Yes, I do want to be closer to Hannah too. She's all on her own, and most of her family has abandoned her. But this isn't about her. It was always our plan to move to the kingdom when I got a good apprenticeship. No, it was always your plan, Mother screamed, pointing at me with tears in her eyes. I've never had a say in any bit of this plan. I'm your mother, and you're dying! The world fell silent as her lower lip trembled. My heart hammered, and tears blurred my vision. My cheeks were hot, and my throat tight. You're dying, Oma. She stood up straight, lifting her chin and squaring her shoulders. Go to bed. I turned away, but stopped at the door. I swallowed away the searing outrage in my chest, bringing kindness to my voice. You can't keep fighting this. One day, you'll be too weak to fight. Is that a threat? She growled the question through her pollen sore throat. It's reality, I whispered sadly, and looked to her over my shoulder. I love you, Mom. Chapter 3. I woke to the gentle chime of my automatic alarm and blinked away the crust in my eyes. I sat back in my lumpy little bed and rubbed a hand over my face. Taegon and Tohwan, my twin brothers, were sound asleep on the bunk they were quickly outgrowing. Taegon seemed to have shot up like a bamboo plant over the summer, and he was now almost up to my nose. I had also grown several centimeters, so it was a feat that he'd changed so much. Tohwan said he wasn't bothered by this, but I could tell he was disappointed he had yet to hit his growth spurt. Still, seeing Taegon's toes hanging over the edge of his bed reminded me how much we needed to move into something more suitable, with more space. I was running out of time to convince Mother to move before the school year started next week. There was a tink-tink at the window, and I looked over to see our rooster eyeballing me with impatience. His feathers ruffled like they always did before he crowed, and then he let out a long, annoying, "Ka-ka-ka-ka!" It hadn't been long, but it felt like a lifetime since I'd done a full, non-rest day's worth of chores. First, I went to release and feed the chickens, lest the roosters stampede through the house, crowing at the top of his lungs and waking everyone. I grabbed the old water buckets and made 4 trips down to the river. On the last trip, I splashed some of the cool, refreshing water over my face. I hadn't missed these mindless chores. School had been hard, as had apprenticing with Woonji, but it was work that I loved. It was work that got me closer to my dreams. These chores were busy work. Running back and forth from a stream to collect water for the house when the kingdom had perfectly good running water? Why would anyone want to live like this? I think some people like the simplicity of it, May spoke up for the first time this morning. Or perhaps it's because they've never known the convenience of the city, I posed back. May hummed.
Maybe, but you recall how you feel about the rude people who bump you on the street or try to sell you something, or try to rob and kill you? That's not out here, at least not much.
I nodded. That's true. A trade-off I will gladly make to give my family a better life. I can protect them from robberies.
But not rudeness. Consider it, Jiyoung. Your siblings will attend primary in the kingdom. You know how it's been for you as an outer city boy at Bastion.
Shinsu, I sighed. I know. We'll make do. I made my way back into town. The sun had just shown its first light over the horizon, in the sky colored with bright pinks. I didn't see the full sunrise that often in the kingdom. The buildings were too tall. That was one thing I did miss. But not forever. We could come back home once Mother was cured and I was done with school. I could help Sehun build his own house, and we could make additions to ours so there were enough rooms that each sibling could have their own. I could create a plumbing system, expand the boundaries of the garden, and so much more. Once Mother was better. I put the last bucket into the house reserve, and Enby waved me out to the garden.
You're home,
she exclaimed in a hushed voice as she opened her arms for a hug. I squeezed her tightly. Woonji released me for the week.
That's great. Come see this, she urged, pulling my hand as she moved her way through the sprawling garden.
They had already added another 10 meters at the back end, where 3 tall trellis archways stood.
What do you think?
She asked, sounding giddy.
It's wonderful. What's here? Grapes over there, tomatoes right behind them, then pole beans and snap peas on the center one. And the last one has cucumber and squash.
She was positively glowing as she showed me from trellis to trellis. We picked a few ripe cherry tomatoes to eat while we walked through the new space. Their flavor was sweeter than any other tomato I'd ever tasted. My chest tightened with worry. Would there be space for Envy to grow her garden in the kingdom? We could create a private window garden, or maybe if we got a patio, she could grow plants there. But that was insignificant compared to what she had here. There were group garden areas for the apartments I'd looked at. But would that be enough? NB loved this like I loved Tuco. And taking her into the city would take her away from the garden.
What's wrong?
NB asked. I shook myself out of the thought as we stopped amid flowering bushes, shedding their last blossoms for the summer.
It's nothing, I said with a laugh. She crossed her arms and cocked out her hip, just like Mother.
You're lying, I bobbed my head, weighing whether to be honest. NB was a strong, independent girl, and if I didn't tell her what was going on, she'd find out her own way. Still, I could obscure the full, deadly truth. You can't talk to the others, okay? You know I've always wanted to move us into the kingdom, but Mother doesn't want to go. She's well now, but what if she gets sick again? She needs real help. Enby nodded solemnly.
I know.
I sighed. Sorry. I don't want to take you away from this. That's what's on my mind. You love this garden. She stepped closer, a kind smile gracing her round face. I will always be growing something wherever we go. My family is more important than a garden. Mother's life is more important than cucumbers.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?